You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters, and this week in partnership with Glambia, the global nutrition group. In these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer specializing in food and science. Now, the title of this podcast is Trends and Insight in Nutrition Bars, and we're going to explore the extraordinary evolution of nutrition bars and the technical challenges of making them. And we're also going to explore their future within the whole context of healthy snacking. We're joined by four fantastic guests from Glambia: Paul O'Mahony, Product Strategic Manager, EMEA.
Hi, everyone.
Brad Myers, Senior Director, Product Strategic Management.
Hello.
Max Maxwell, Market Intelligence Manager, Healthy Snacking.
Greetings to you all.
And Jason Demerly, Director of Research, Global Ingredients.
Greetings.
So, Brad, let's kick this off. And it sounds like a stupid question, really, but can you just define a nutrition bar for us?
Yes. No, I think that's an important kind of foundational question for the discussion. Nutrition bars are primarily going to be, obviously, in a bar format. So that would be most likened to a candy bar, something you can grab on the go, throw in your pocket, and eat it at your leisure at a later time. But the difference between, say, a candy bar or even a granola bar versus a nutrition bar is you're going to have some additional added health benefit that's going to give you that nutritional benefit. And there's been a lot of conflation, I would say, in the last maybe 5 or 10 years with protein and nutrition bars. But to be clear, the broader category of a nutrition bar, it does not have to be protein-based. There's a lot of other ingredients or health benefits that can come in a bar format that are going to provide a level of nutrition. But the reality is that most of the bars on the market that are positioned as a nutrition bar are protein-based, and protein is going to be the main driver of that nutritional benefit.
And how did we get to where bars are today? It's an extraordinary industry that sort of didn't really exist a few years back. What's brought us to this now?
Yeah, absolutely. There's really been meteoric growth outpacing the food industry as a whole, which, you know, it grows flat to low single digit percentages typically, whereas the nutrition bar category, and particularly the higher end protein of that category, has been growing double digits for a number of years, both in the US, but as well as in other markets like Europe. And it really started, I would say the journey again started in format with the candy bar. This idea of convenience on the go, people are living much, much more active on the go lifestyles these days. They don't have as much time to sit down for a proper meal. So you have this this evolution of people's eating occasions and consumption occasions, getting away from meals to more snacks. You hear about people now snacking more, especially with younger populations, than they are actually sitting down to a meal. And the bar is a great format for that. It's not the only format, of course, that will give portable, convenient, shelf-stable snacking as an opportunity, but it is a great format for that. And so we started with the candy bar. The granola bar was sort of the first evolution of that. But in more recent years, consumers started demanding, again, more nutrition from their products. So that was the entry point for the protein bar. And at the time when that product category started to launch, which is probably about 2 decades ago, if not a little bit earlier than that, it was really focused in sports nutrition, bodybuilders, that consumer set, which consumes a lot of products. They're very loyal to a particular brand, but it's a small niche of the overall population. And what has happened in more recent years is these protein bars have really crossed over to more your mainstream consumer. And that has really evolved the channel dynamics where the products are sold, because they're maybe not looking for a protein bar in the gym. Maybe they're looking for it in the supermarket. And it's also really forced the industry to come up with better solutions. Because someone whose only goal is just to get protein in their body before a workout, maybe isn't as concerned about the taste, or maybe they're concerned about the taste, but they're okay with something maybe a little bit inferior that they have to chew on for a while, or you know, maybe it doesn't quite chew like a candy bar would. But a mainstream consumer has much higher expectations when it comes to taste. So the industry has really had to develop better technologies and better solutions to be able to develop or deliver rather both that healthiness, that nutrition, that protein primarily, but do it in a package that tastes great and that they're happy to be eating.
Yeah. So Max, can you sort of, let's put a nutrition bar from 10 years ago next to one that's produced today. What's difference between the two? Is it the wrapping and the marketing, or is there something more fundamental than that?
It's both. I think the best way to talk to that is a few examples. A recent highly growing bar was the RX bar. And what was really of greatest interest with that bar was a simple, clean label, which is one of the big requirements that the public has in terms of the bars. Some of the bars have stayed around. Clif Bar has not changed very much with their rock climbing symbol and with their organic and natural ingredients. A product like Quest 10 years ago didn't exist, and now it's one of the leading high protein bars, and it combines high protein from dairy proteins as well as fiber. Another kind of evolved bar over the last 10 years would be the Kind Bar, which is kind of mixing the message, even on the label of the product, conveying the kindness to your body as well as to others. When they did the introduction of that bar, a lot of it was by personal handing it out at places like the Natural Food Show.
Now, Paul, how about the consumer, the person buying this? How have they changed? I mean, we talked about the bodybuilder who needs one thing, and possibly they don't want it to taste nice. You know, they want to be hardcore. They want something that tastes horrible. But the person buying it has shifted, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And just linking back with some of the comments Brad has made there as well. You know, bars are a fantastic, convenient format. So you can use it for, you know, many occasions. And I think that's where the change is happening. So moving from hardcore bodybuilders, high protein bars, which are chewy and hard, it's now going more mainstream. So you can have a bar when you're cycling, you can have a bar when you're in a car, you can have a bar when you're walking. So it's the convenience is number one, and it's the occasions number two. And what you're seeing is you can get a bar in a petrol station, wherever you feel the impulse, you can go and take a bar, and it's very convenient. And then next comes into your mind, well, I'd like it to be nutritional. And as that's moving more mainstream, the taste and the texture and the mouthfeel of those bars has to really, really taste very, very good. So it's not only about health, but people want these bars to taste really, really good. So they actually feel they're not giving something up, but they're getting something more nutritional. And that's where the trend is currently going. You've got bars targeting sort of females. You've got bars targeting males. You've got chocolate bars like Brands, Cadbury's, making their bars healthier as well. And taste combined with convenience is where it's going in that. Whatever the occasion is, you can get the bar, whether it's an energy bar or protein bar or you're exercising. You're making decisions all the time on what type of bar do you want to purchase. And it's a really exciting time. And for us, I think in Glanbia, our challenge and where we play a role is to support making these bars taste very, very good while being healthy at the same time.
What's your bar of choice, Paul?
My bar of choice would actually be a protein bar. It's more like I'm more an indulgent type person, so I like chocolate bars to taste really, really good. So I also like caramel, so I like a Mars bar with some protein. So I'm more on the indulgent side of bars, but of course, again, you know, other consumers want bars which are more based on grains or those type of textures, nut bars. There's a whole variety there, but I'm more I'm more challenging. I want the indulgent bars to taste really good.
Luxurious. Fantastic. Now, yes. Jason, let's pull this baby apart a little bit. How has the formulation of the bar, of the nutrition bar, changed over the years?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, initially there were, especially with the bodybuilding, the sports guys, I mean, they're a lot of times they're going for mass and they're looking at, increasing carbs and protein and everything, because they're really trying to build a lot of mass. And so the syrups is one thing that has changed. And, we've moved long time ago, moved away from, you know, your corn syrups and things like that to more sugar alcohols like allulose or maltitol and different fiber syrups are increasing.
And is that popular. A textural issue? Is it you move because of the texture or is it other elements?
Yeah, it's a few different reasons. I mean, one is water activity is a huge issue and you know, keeping your water activity lower. It's also a hardness. Your bar hardness comes into play where certain syrups are going to give you a harder, more firm bar and shorten your shelf life, or at least the palatability of the bar, because of those protein carbohydrate interactions that are happening. So in the fiber syrup, that you also have when you do consume a lot of protein, I mean, especially amongst the sports nutrition crowd, they would need a pretty big increase in fiber to be able to, aid in digestion and whatnot. And
pass that through, because we all know about the bodybuilders and the strange smells they make.
Yeah, you got to get things through the system, you know.
Yeah, chuck a load of inulin at that baby. Come on.
Right.
So Jason, is the bar, is the nutrition bar a huge technical challenge, or is it just another one of the things that every food technologist comes across?
It is a challenge because they're, you know, with a candy bar, your traditional Mars bar or whatever, I mean, you've got fat and sugar, which is great. And it lasts, you know, it maintains softness throughout, you know, for a year or so, you know, it works fine. But with the, as I mentioned, these protein carbohydrate interactions, you end up with all sorts of challenges, not just in hardness and shelf life. And that's the number one challenge, is getting over, getting a soft bar throughout a year shelf life. But it's also the processability, you know, what you have some flow issues where cold flow or stand up, where it doesn't, you need to get the right balance in there to get your dough through the equipment and maintain a shape during processing, or it'll, you know, when I say cold flow, it could kind of form to the shape of the package instead of maintaining that traditional bar shape that we expect. So, I mean, there's a lot of challenges there many brand owners don't really consider. I mean, they might get into something initially and, you know, we realize that through the development process, that there's all these issues that have to be addressed to maintain the integrity of a bar and get the desired result, you know, over shelf life.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Brad, when nutrition bars really first cropped up, I thought they'd be a bit of a short-lived gimmick, which shows you how good my future gazing is. They haven't. They've sort of, you know, they've persevered, and the industry's got just absolutely enormous. Has the evolution of this industry surprised you in any way?
Well, yes and no. I mean, if you look at it from 30,000 feet, it makes a lot of sense because, you know, I joke a lot about the food police here, at least in the U.S. You know, every week you're reading something on the internet or maybe 20 years ago in the newspaper about, you know, the latest ingredient or whatever it might be that's bad for you. And, starting in the late 70s and moving through the 90s where it kind of hit its peak, you know, fat was the enemy. The food police were going after fat. Then we started the sugar reduction trend here in the U.S. And that still continued, you know, and sugar became the enemy. But the food police have never really gone after protein in a big way. So putting all the stuff aside of people, you know, proactively knowing what's good for them nutritionally, even if you forget that, protein is safe to a consumer. They've never heard that it's bad for them. Everyone, at least in the US. Now, when you go to other markets in other places of the world, you may find a different response. But at least in the US, in Western Europe and Eastern Europe even as well, people know protein is good for them. They know it's something that they want and they're looking for it on labels. So the protein bar really hits that trend as far as safe ingredients, healthy ingredients. And then getting back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of the format, it also is really supporting the lifestyles people are living today, where they're, you know, they're busier than they've ever been. You don't really have as much of the sitting down for a meal with your family. People are snacking in between meals, or maybe even replacing one or two meals a day with multiple snacks. So this portable, shelf-stable, convenient format that the bar delivers is really hitting against that macro trend as well.
So, and just Max, if we take this idea of trends, I think that's quite interesting. Does the world of nutrition bars, does it reflect larger food trends, or would you say that trends started on a smaller scale in bars or in gyms have then become macro trends in food?
So, I think convenience and portability and taste are kind of all the three factors I think of in terms of the macro trends as opposed to maybe the macronutrients, and bars just meet those continually. So that's why I think they continue to both evolve and well as to grow. You know, they started out, as people have said, you know, kind of in a sports nutrition audience. Then they went to the more active, healthy lifestyle situation. As Paul mentioned, you know, in terms of a lot of people like chocolate, but there's an evolution for people liking fruit. And so there's a lot of date-formed bars or fruit bars that appeal to another group of people. I think what happens is, you know, a fair amount of people try the bars, and then each time a different type of bar comes out, they become loyal followers because they like the taste. Bars have always been really helpful in terms of people on the go and people skipping meals. And then also something we really haven't mentioned at all, but one of the intermediate phases of the bars were all the diet bars for the meal replacement. People may remember things like, you know, the Zone bars and Atkins, which has had at least three lives in terms of recreating itself and meeting a new need. So, you know, and then, you know, when I think of the very latest, you know, bars that are out there, there's all sorts of bars that are able to reach market through online delivery and so forth. If you go to a big grocery store here in the US, it's amazing the amount of bars that are available. I mean, there are literally hundreds of bars of different types available, but there's thousands of people who want to introduce bars. So it's easier to introduce bars online through a social media scenario and so forth. So I think it's a trend. You know, we've thought many times, oh, it's reached its apex, but it hasn't yet. I mean, and there's no reason to assume that will change, because I don't think people are going to stop being on the go. We've had a few months here where things have been a little bit disturbed, of course, but I think there'll just be new trends that will follow along that line.
Okay, and then, so, I mean, the other thing that I find fascinating is the sort of the application of this in the real world. And I wonder, Paul, do you think that your approach sets you apart from other ingredient suppliers? I mean, and are there people just coming to you saying, bars, okay, we're going to do a bar. Bars sound easy. Let's give that a go to launch our company, because it would seem like a long shelf life tool, a relatively high margin product if you can get it right. Does it seem like an easy way in for people to begin with?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think, you know, bars are, as has been alluded to here, bars, and certainly healthy nutritional bars that have great taste, great texture, are actually quite challenging. And, you know, we understand that as Glombi, and we focused on that from an R&D scientific. It's almost like, you know, in many ways, it's a system and it's live. You put in protein and there's fat and there's moisture and there's water, and they're all interacting together, and that's changing over time. So if you don't know the right protein to put in there, the specific functionality of that protein and how that behaves within this chemistry system that's changing over time, you'll make a bar day one, and you'll get a very different bar in 2 months' time. So you want that bar to taste really well throughout its shelf life, understand the chemistry of it, understand the texture, the type of texture and mouthfeel that you want. And that's really what we do. We work at a lab scale, chemistry scale, understanding, producing the type of proteins. We produce proteins ourselves. We understand their functionality, and understand the type of how they behave in this system to give you the right texture. So it's not that it's not changing the making the bars healthier is a nice good thing to do, but it's definitely is very, very challenging. And also, we try and help companies grow internationally. So we help brands develop bars in Europe. I travel to India, so we understand the market and the textures and the different type of bars they want there. So we understand with our insights as well. So we try and take brands and customers on a journey, helping them make really good tasting bars in Europe or in the US or in Asia. And that's a really interesting trends in those different markets, and interesting consumer insights and interesting consumer behaviors.
And what do you think the difference is between your approach to other ingredient suppliers, do you think?
No, this is Jason. I mean, if I could just interject a little bit here.
Yeah,
I think we do have a much different approach, because, you know, we take the customer many times from ideation, you know, coming up with the bar. We'll say, here's the bar market, and here's where the customer thinks they want to play in this area, and kind of we show them what there is out there, and then what we can do to get the style of bar that they desire. And we have the expertise. We have years we were one of the first companies in this space. I mean, we're kind of the pioneers as far as bar ingredient development and research and development and applications development. And so we have years and years of expertise, you know, developing all varieties of nutritional bars, and all the different styles. And I think what Paul was mentioning, you know, the different regions, we have very different tastes and very different texture requirements in different areas. We have 9 sites altogether, but focused on bars. You know, we have these 3 sites, you know, covering the globe, and we do quite a bit of work to understand the sensory aspect that's desired, you know, for each region. You know, in Asia, it's very different. In India, you know, especially in Asia, they have a desire for a shorter texture bar than what anyone in the U.S. would like. And in the U.S., they want to be as close to a Mars bar or a candy bar as possible, you know, a soft, slightly chewy bar. And we have been developing ingredient solutions to tailor, you know, to make these different styles of bar, because what it comes down to, again, is that protein, carbohydrate, the chemistry that happens, you know, those interactions between those two types of ingredients, and we're trying to manipulate those or make adjustments in the protein to address the at least the negative impacts of those interactions. And I think, you know, with the bar solution portfolio that we offer, we're able to, you know, mitigate a lot of those negative effects, the hardness, and get the different types of chew and the different sensory effects that people want. So our approach, you know, taking the customer and going through the entire, you know, starting with the market and the insights, and looking at you know, here's what's out there, and here's where you're going to compete, and really defining what it is that they want to give them the best opportunity when they launch, and then taking them through the development process, and we'll actually develop the bar for them, you know, with them, and things are launching a lot faster, and so there's a lot of competition in this space, and so we can really help a customer or a brand owner increase that speed to market.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back in part two to talk about emerging markets, ingredient trends, going global, and their predictions on the future of bars. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.